This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation. Mystery Hour with James O'Brien.
4 minutes after 12 is the time, and Mystery Hour is upon us. Your weekly opportunity to achieve the sort of satisfaction not ordinarily available anywhere else on your radio dial. You know what we missed earlier, don't you? Should have given Jamie a Ray Liotta. So you're having a chat. You mentioned Jamie Oliver on the radio, and Jamie rings in. That is almost textbook Ray Liotta, but I felt it would have spoiled the tone, and I wouldn't have had the opportunity to get Keith his special recipe tips. So how this hour of radio works is this. You ring in with a question, I banter with you for a bit, crack some hilarious jokes and drop some killing puns, and then someone else rings in with the answer. And it's magnificent. It's also available in all manner of strange places now, this podcast. So if you're not listening live on the radio at the minute, then a particularly warm welcome to you. It's 4 minutes after 12, if you're listening live. And this is Mystery Hour. And the phone lines are full, so I don't think I need to do a talk. Why are the phone lines full? I must be doing something right today. It's all gone perfectly. Jinxed it. Keith's going to set fire to his eyebrows later when he flames his pork chop. I'm just going to crack on, and you can work out, if you're not familiar with it, how it works by dint of the fact that it's working. So we'll start with Barry, who's in Croydon. Barry, question or answer?
Question, James. Carry and on, by man. The way, keep up the good work.
Good man, I'll do my best, Barry.
You keep up. It's so refreshing to hear a media person tell the truth. Anyway, my question is, when does a murder become an assassination? How far up the pecking order do you have to be before you get assassinated rather than a murder?
I don't think it's a pecking order. I think if it's done for political reasons, it's an assassination. Don't you?
Okay.
Ava's shaking her head, which is extremely bold, considering she's only been in situ for 4 days.
Well, so there you are. She's
very, very bold. It's because, you know, we shouldn't make light of this when we actually start speaking of specifics. We can use Donald Trump as a reason to make light of it. So Donald Trump tweets that he has received more attacks than any American president in history. And somebody points out that four of them have actually been assassinated.
Yeah.
And that word fits there because you're thinking of an American president. But if anybody, and then you think of British politicians who were murdered by the IRA, like Airey Neave, Lord Mountbatten, they were assassinations. For my money, and I think under the technical terms of the definition, we'd have to say that Joe Cox was assassinated by a terrorist, a white supremacist in that case, because it was done for political reasons. So I think it's the day of the jackal, they were trying to kill de Gaulle. I think it's an assassination when it's been done for political reasons.
James, I think you're probably right,
I'm wondering who would qualify for a Ray Liotta on this one, but it's a fairly dark avenue, and I don't think we should go down it, Barry.
Agreed.
Round of applause for me, please. Mind how you go. Thank you for the kind words. They are not compulsory. Bradley is in Twickenham. Bradley, question or answer?
I've got a question for you, James.
Carry on.
Right. When I'm sat in my car and I look in the rearview mirror...
Oh, hang on. No, whoa. This is a motoring question.
It is, yeah. Do you drive, James?
Do I drive? Does Lewis Hamilton drive? Carry on, Bradley.
Right. When I'm sat in my car and I look in my rearview mirror,
yes,
the object seems further away.
Yes.
Yet, when I look in my wing mirrors, they seem closer. So which mirror is accurate?
I like that question. All right, I stand corrected. Oh, this is awful. I'm having so many slices of humble pie today. I shall be bloated by the time I get out of the studio. So you're right. The wing mirror is more accurate.
How do you know?
I don't. I'm just saying words.
Because when I stick my head out the window and look, it looks completely different again.
So there's three different perspectives. Well, there's obviously some magnifying involved in the mirror, right?
So when I go to overtake, I look at my rearview mirror, and I think, great, I've got plenty of rear. Then I look at my wing mirror, and I think, I haven't.
Yeah, but I trust the wing mirror, otherwise you'll have a crash.
Well, I trust the wing mirror, but also, what's the point of the rear view?
Keith's shaking his head now. Why do we have two different perspectives is the real question, and which one is closer to reality, right?
Yeah.
Oh, no. I'm not... Do you know what, Bradley? I don't know. You've clearly not been listening to the programme for many years, and that's absolutely fine. But the reason why I didn't like motoring questions historically was because I was actually, as you just suspected, I was a very late arrival. In the world of driving. I only really learnt to drive when Mrs. O'Brien was pregnant on the, I think, perfectly reasonable grounds that she wasn't prepared to drive herself to the labour ward when she went into labour. So I was 32 when I learnt to drive. And for me, I've always found motoring quite dull. But now I'm 47, it's not that dull anymore.
No.
And I really like your question. I don't know what that says about me or you.
It says that we're, like, intrigued by wing mirrors and mirrors.
That's what I was worried about, Bradley. It says that we're intrigued by wing mirrors, my friend. And we will get you an answer. 12:09 is the time. I wasn't. I was 34. Sorry. Fake news. Paul's in Westminster. Paul, question or answer? Oh, come off it.
Hello, James. Hello. It's a question.
Go on.
Right. Why
turn your radio off. Turn your radio off now.
I haven't got a radio off.
What's that echo in the background?
There's people in the back of my cab.
Oh, I do apologise. Hello. Hello, customers. Give Paul a friendly tip. Carry on.
Right. Why does crossing of fingers symbolise hopefulness?
I've done this a million times. It's all right. I've got a new team, so I can't get too picky. It's actually quite straightforward when you think about it. It's a little prayer.
Little prayer? Crossing a finger is a prayer.
Yeah. Think about it. In the Christian church, what is an item of worship?
The cross.
Ergo.
Got there.
Isn't it?
Well done. Thank you. Well done.
Thank you. Yeah. Dominus Vobiscum. Well. Round of applause for me. Thank you, Paul. Mind how you go. And God bless you. 12:10 is the time. You're listening to James O'Brien's Mystery Hour on LBC, where, given that I've got a new team in place, one, two, I didn't do the rearview mirror. Have I ever done every single one myself? I have to go back through the annals. Keith's been listening since he was knee-high to a grasshopper. I've certainly had a go, but in recent years I've stepped back from trying to answer all questions myself, but I'm in such an exuberant mood today, I can feel the old magic creeping up on me. Lisa is in Great Yarmouth. Lisa, question or answer?
Question, please, James.
Carry on, Lisa.
I want to know why babies, and again, why you grow into adults as well, why the bottom lip comes out and quivers when they cry?
Oh, that's a lovely question. Sorry, I'm just enacting it. So something to do with, does it happen automatically? Just pretend you just squint a bit, like close your eyes, like you were crying a bit. Does yours come out automatically, or am I imagining things?
It turns down, but it doesn't come out. But I know, like when you're proper sobbing, and when babies, especially. What teaches babies to quiver their bottom lip?
It must be genetic. It must be something that they do that triggers a reaction from mum of care or concern. I'm not going to claim a round of applause for this one before anybody starts writing to Ofcom again. However, it must be something to do with the reaction that it generates, don't you think?
Yeah, I mean, I can understand why the bottom lip turns down and even why it comes out. Because, like you said, if you try and look upset now, your bottom lip naturally comes out like a little bit.
Yeah.
But when you're crying and it kind of quivers, or sometimes your bottom lip quivers even before the tears come out, it just seems like a strange reaction to, you know, to sadness and that kind of thing. So.
It does. No, I like it. I like it. I shall try and find out for you. And I don't think we've ever had that one before. How's life in Yarmouth? Hang on, don't go yet, because we're doing both ends of the seaside world. We've had Blackpool and now we've got Yarmouth. So what's new
Yarmouth,
in Yarmouth?
Yarmouth wins.
Sea life.
Sea life. Stand there. We've got the oldest wooden roller coaster in the world.
Scares the life out of me.
With a brake.
Absolutely terrifying.
It's not electrical at all. There's a guy sitting in the middle with a handbrake and he slows you down.
I know. It's a proper old-fashioned little park, that, isn't it?
Yeah,
a proper old-fashioned I get to Galston sometimes as well.
That's actually where I live.
No
I
way.
I said Great Yarmouth.
Because you thought that this lefty metropolitan liberal media elite wouldn't have heard of Galston, didn't you?
Well,
you were wrong, Lisa.
It is a classic, but, you know, you ask most people, they've never heard of Galston, but it is Norfolk's little gem, definitely.
Well, they have now, Lisa. They have now. 12:13 is the time. Get yourself to Galston after having a go on the most terrifying, or the most rickety roller coaster in the British seaside. 12:13 is the time. So we want to know why babies stick their bottom lip out when they're crying. And it's not just babies, we all do it. If I tell you now to look like you're crying, first thing you do is stick your bottom lip out, isn't it? Like that. Why did the rearview mirror and the wing mirror... Oh, get me, Petrolhead. I'll be presenting Top Gear before you know it. Why does the rearview mirror and the wing mirror have a different... What's the word I want? It's not perspective. Different depth? There's a word for it. Anyway, you get it. Mike's in Leatherhead. Mike, question or answer?
Answer.
Carry on, Mike.
Okay, I'm a driving instructor, been doing it for 35 years.
I think we know where we're going with this one then. You haven't rung in to talk to me about babies' bottom lips, have you, Michael?
No, I haven't.
Carry on.
Okay, right. Interior mirror is flat and gives a true reflection of distance. Exterior mirrors are convexed and give a distorted distance.
To make things look nearer so that you act more safely.
If you've ever been to the States and you look in a wing mirror in the States, it's etched onto the glass. Objects in this mirror are closer than they appear.
Is that right?
I won't actually point out that only the Americans need reminding every time they look, but...
Yes. Round of applause for Michael. Great. That's great work, and you've already told me your qualifications. Fantastic. To get a Rayleigh Otter, if anyone's confused, Mike would have to have been the person that invented the convex wing mirror in order to change the perspective on the passing traffic to ensure greater levels of safety. Wayne's in Colchester. Wayne, question or answer?
Question, please, James.
Carry on. You realise Wayne in Basildon's going to be gutted. He's going to think you're nicking his act. You're ringing him from just up the road with the same name during Mystery Hour, which he likes to think of as his personal fiefdom. This is only going to end in tears. Carry on, Wayne. Question or answer?
It's a question, please. Okay. I just wanted to know, me and my wife are big gin fans, but we're really annoyed that you can only get tonic bottles in dinky little 1 litre size. I just wondered why that is.
You can buy a litre, you can buy big litre bottles of it.
Yeah, but if you look
why can't I get a Coca-Cola sized portion of tonic?
That's right.
It's just because you... Well, I'm afraid to say, Wayne, the answer to this might be that you and your wife aren't quite as big a gin fans as you think you are, because I presume that the idea is, with a decent measure of gin, that's the amount of tonic you need for a single drink if you still want to be able to taste the gin. If you poured a whole can of Coke you don't really have gin and Coke, but you might have rum and Coke. If you put, or Jack Daniels and Coke, don't drink, kids. If you poured a whole can of Coke into your Jack Daniels or your rum, you wouldn't be able to taste the Jack Daniels or the rum. And if you poured a 330ml measure of tonic water into your sixth of a gill or third of a gill of gin, you wouldn't be able to taste the gin, mate.
But say you're drinking at home, you've got your big bottle of... I can't mention the brand.
Yeah, no, you can. They might send me some. Go on.
So you got your big bottle
Bombay
of Gordon.
Sapphire. No, Gordon's. I don't want Gordon's. I want Sipsmith, mate. Seriously, I live in Chiswick. Okay. You might be necking Gordon's down in Colchester. I want a bottle of Sipsmith, thank you very much. Or something artisan that tastes of lavenders. Carry on, mate. Go on.
Well, you want to make a night of it, so you're not just pouring out of the dinky can.
Yeah.
You've got your litre bottle.
Yeah, but then it'll go flat, pal.
That can't be the...
Of course it is. It's a measure for one drink. And if you opened a tinny of tonic,
What about the bottles? The litre bottles?
Yeah, but you can put the lid back on that if you really want to. But that was my original answer to your question that you, I felt, rather rudely rejected. So that's how it works. It's a measure for a single drink and it stays fizzy. So I go for the Fever Tree myself rather than the Schweppes. You get a little six pack of Fever Tree and you open a new bottle for every drink. You're guaranteed both fizziness and perfect proportionality of spirit to mixer.
You really are revealing yourself as the lefty liberal elite today, James.
Sipsmith and Fever Tree, mate. I know. It's terrible. It's terrible. Wait till I tell you what my favourite crisps are. I tell you. We're calling the style police. Round of applause for that. Do you accept that answer, Wayne? You've got to.
I don't really want to, but...
But you know you have to. Ask me what my qualifications are.
What are your qualifications?
Mostly vodka. Round of applause for me!
Thank you.
12:17 is the time. Actually, I say that. I've just been a bit off my game lately on the vodka. I've been drinking a bit of Malbec of an evening. A nice glass of red wine. I shall make amends this weekend. I shall get back on the vodka. Back on the vodka wagon. Time for a break.
This is LBC. Mystery Hour on LBC with James O'Brien.
It's 12:21. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC, where Mystery Hour continues. I make no apologies for knocking it out of the park today, answering almost every question, but here are some ones that still need answers. Why do babies stick their bottom lip out? That's it, is it? That's the only one. Oof. So I got 4 out of 5 so far. Should I have another think? Because I've already had a crack at the... Oh, no, rear view mirror. Michael got that. Well done, Michael. Good work. The only question still in need of an answer is the one about why babies stick their bottom lip out when they're crying. Or indeed adults, but if we begin with the babies, it'll probably apply equally to the adults. 12:21 is the time. Steve is in Ascot. Steve, question or answer?
Question, please.
Carry on.
Why is a carpenter's pencil flat when a normal pencil is round?
I know this as well, but I've literally just worked it out. I didn't even know that was called a carpenter's pencil, but it's so obvious, Stephen.
Oh, go on then.
Well, use your noodle. Come on.
I don't know. I've wondered about it for ages.
Right, let's do some role play. Let's pretend that we're working together as carpenters, all right? So I'm doing some sawing. You're my mate. You're my carpenter's mate. Steve, the carpenter's mate. Are you ready for this role?
I'm ready.
Passes your pencil, Steve.
There you are, James. Thank my flat pencil.
Thank you very much, Steve. I'm just going to mark off where I'm going to saw next, and I'll give you back your pencil, Steve. Could you just rest it on that sloping plank of wood over there?
I could, James.
Is it going to roll away, Steve?
It's not going to roll away, James. What? But I don't think that's the definitive answer.
Is there more to it?
I think there probably is, James, yes.
Having said that, I think we're both up for a BAFTA.
Because most pencils aren't exactly round, they're multi-faceted, they're multi-edged, aren't they?
Well, OK then. Steve, pass me a ruler.
Yes, James.
No, you say, I haven't got one. I say, have you got a flat pencil I could use instead of a ruler? You're not having that either, are you?
No, I'm not, James, no.
You did. Well, I think you did. Someone else might ring in with the answer that I've already provided, but I shall put it on the board, my friend. Why is a carpenter's pencil flat, as in the flat ridges, as opposed to round, which I presume we're all working on the presumption I don't need to explain the meaning of. Neil is in Swansea. Neil, question or answer?
It's a question, James.
Carry on.
It's a political one, so but I'll avoid the any political parties. why do MPs have surgeries? Why is it called a surgery?
Oh, what a lovely question. We can work out the answer, can't we? But
can
that's
we?
Not good. Wait, no, actually, we can't. Did they used to do it in doctors' surgeries, or does it simply mean a place that people come to consult a so-called expert? I genuinely don't know. What a lovely question. Yeah, you're on.
Okay.
No, you're absolutely on.
That's the wife's question, so she's like the credit for that one.
Why didn't she ring in?
Oh, she's scared of you, James.
Scared of me. I'm a pussycat. Neil, I shall find out for you and what's your wife's name?
It's Cheryl.
For you and Cheryl. We shall find out why the why surgeries are called surgeries. And you could ask the same question about doctors, but we know that a doctor practices in a surgery. Why do we call an MP's regular meeting with constituencies, where constituencies can go to present their problems? Ah, well, they go to present a problem and the MP tries to fix it, so there's a medical perhaps. But I love that question. When and why? 03456060973 is the number that you need. So we have got baby's bottom lips and surgeries. Is that? Carpenter's pencil. Crikey, how could I have forgotten that? I can't imagine what else the answer could be apart from the one I already provided. But Keith is looking very gnomic today. He's looking very gnomic, as if he know, like Yoda. As if answer to this knows he. Jacob's in Stoke Newington. Jacob, question or answer?
It's a question, James.
Carry on.
First time caller.
You're very welcome. Don't be. It's only mystery, Aaron. It's only me.
Okay, so it's basically why does it smell after we cut the grass?
I think it's. I mean, because it's cut. I mean, the chemicals in the imagine if grass bled, right?
Yeah.
And you wouldn't be able to smell the blood, would you, until you cut the grass? No, you don't sound very impressed, Jacob.
No, not.
But I think that... let me try again. It's like the grass has got a covering on it, which stops the smell from escaping. So when you cut it, the smell escapes. A bit like Tupperware or prophylactic of sorts. No?
I don't think so. No.
So you.
Why should it have a smell in the first place? Like.
But why does anything have a smell? That's a silly question.
Yeah. I don't know.
Also, it lures insects to pollinate, perhaps. All right, why does it smell when Jacob cuts the grass? You're on. I apologise for trying to answer that one. I should have been a little bit more modest.
Yeah.
But, you know, I've got bills to pay. Jacob, thank you. That was a terrible phone line. Was he all right? Or was he in a sort of nuclear reactor when he made that call? On a plane. Steve's in Southgate. Steve, question or answer?
Question, please.
Carry on.
Some churches have spires and some have kind of square turrets.
Yes.
Yeah, like, and I was driving back from Shifnal and I noticed it was more up north. So is it a Norman?
Shifnal in
like?
Shropshire?
Yes.
Oh. Nice part of the world. What were you doing there?
It is. Mate 60th.
Oh, lovely stuff. Lovely time. And of course, you get a lot of, I mean, that rural, Shropshire is one of the, I think, one of the least appreciated counties
beautiful.
In our islands,
yeah.
Isn't it? But you get a lot of, Pevsner had a lot to say about churches in Shropshire. So you noticed a difference between the round
there's
steeple.
There's a lot of coaching in ills in there.
That's right, yes.
As well.
Yeah, that's right.
But, yeah, I just, you know, the closer I got to London, the more the churches had spires.
Oh, okay, so you were getting a square tower on a church in the countryside, and the closer you got to London, the more they were becoming round and pointy.
Yes.
Like upside-down ice cream cones.
Yes.
For anybody who's ever made a fairy castle for their son's or daughter's birthday, those upside-down ice cream cones do a lot of they do a lot of work. I could tell you that for nothing. I love that question. I mean, obviously, every single person listening is going to recognise what you've described, but only a tiny number, perhaps, are going to know the answer. There might not be a difference, but it's ease of building.
Right.
I mean, it must be easier to build a square tower than a round one, mustn't it? I don't know.
No, surely not.
We shall find out for you, Steve. I like that one.
Thank you very much.
You're very welcome. Why are some spires, why are some church towers square and other ones are spires, circular? 12:28 is the time. And Mark is in Barnsley. Mark, question or answer?
Question, James.
Carry on, Mark.
Can you tell me why are some villages and towns twinned with other villages and towns in different parts of the world?
Yes.
Who does it and are there any perks?
Yes, yes and yes. I can tell you, I do know who does it and there are perks. In fact, the perks constitute the answer to the first bit of the question. The councillors get to go on lovely jollies with the towns and cities with which they are twinned and they are reciprocated, so they get a free holiday out of it. You also get a little bit of cultural cooperation and what have you, and it is arranged by your local authorities, whether municipal or county councils back in the day or whatever it may be.
That's it.
Correct. And you might get, I don't know, nothing. No perks at all.
Nothing at all. All right.
It's 29 minutes after 12. 03456. Is that all right, Mark? I think that's a good answer. Okay, never mind. It's coming up to 12:30. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. Lisa Aziz is here now with the headlines.
Mystery Hour with James O'Brien. This is LBC.
12:34 is the time. We're playing a game. A game we play every Thursday, but a game that assumes particular significance when it is an election day, because it limits what you can talk about the rest of the time. And it is a game in which we celebrate education, illumination and elucidation by inviting you to ring in with a question. It can be silly or serious, scientific or not scientific. And someone else will hopefully ring in with the answer. So we've answered, I say we, I use the term very loosely, I've answered loads today. There might have been another element to the town twinning question, so I'm gonna withhold my round of applause on that, because oddly enough, the town with which Kidderminster is twinned, my hometown, does lend some support to the theory that has been sent in by Liam and others about what the origins of twinnings may be. So we'll leave that one on the board. I won't claim my round of applause for that. Why does it smell when we cut the grass? Or more specifically, why does it smell when Jacob cuts the grass? Why is a MP's regular opportunity to meet with constituents called a surgery? I like that one, but I'm not sure we'll get an answer. And why do babies stick their bottom lip out when they are crying? And why are some church towers square and other church towers round? It might not have any significance or meaning, but I've got a funny feeling it will. So hopefully you'll be able to tell us. Oh, and why does a carpenter's pencil have flat edges? There's quite a lot to get through there. I may have been patting myself on the back a little prematurely for knocking it out of the park. James is in Tunbridge Wells. James, question or answer?
It's an answer, James.
Carry on, James.
It's the carpenter's pencil.
Excellent.
Yes. I'll give you a point for the obvious answer.
I'll get you. It wasn't obvious to Steve, though. It was obvious to Steve, wasn't it? To stop it rolling away.
Exactly. Yes. There are a number of different things you can do with carpenter's pencils.
Pardon? This is a family programme. Go on.
Don't worry.
Carry on.
It's all safe.
Yes.
They can be used as a measuring implement, in as much as their dimensions are the same, no matter where you get them. They're half inch wide and a quarter of an inch thick.
So even though you've used it a lot, it's the width and the thickness. It doesn't matter about the length.
That's very true.
Got it. I like that. So that comes in useful when you're a carpenter for carpenting.
It certainly does. There are a number of other things you can use carpenter's pencil. Well, the lead, if you look at the end of the carpenter's pencil, the lead is the same shape as the whole profile, but smaller, obviously.
Oh, yeah.
So you can sharpen it blunt, if that makes any sense. So you can use it on rough surfaces such as brick or concrete.
Because you've got a really, pardon my French, you've got a really thick nib, so to speak.
Exactly. It doesn't blunt a normal pencil lead as quickly. Obviously it will, but not as quickly.
Oh, love it. Okay, qualifications? I think I know.
I do carpentry.
There you go. Round of applause for James the Carpenter.
Thank you very much indeed.
No, thank you very much. What an enjoyable question and answer that was. 12:38 is the time, and Joe is in Doncaster. Question or answer, Joe?
Answer.
Carry on.
It's the why does grass smell?
Yes.
It's the plants release grass release a chemical when it's caught that actually helps deter herbivores. The chemical that comes off is like a warning to other grass plants that it's being eaten, and it allows them to start building toxins up in the leaves.
Seriously?
So, it's why you might see like a herd of sheep grazing in a spot, and then all of a sudden they'll just walk across to another patch. They won't keep moving in the same bit they're grazing. It's just the plants have released enough toxins to actually start warning them away.
That doesn't work sense. Very well, does it? Looking, I mean, not being glib, but looking at cows and sheep and stuff, I mean...
It's the reason why they have to have so many chambers in the stomach and have to eat it so many times.
Oh, blimey.
So they can actually...
So they've both evolved. The eater and the eaten have evolved over the years to where we are now.
Like predator and prey.
Yes, exactly.
It's the way it's worked.
That is one of my favourite answers ever. On Mystery Hour, and that is really saying something, Joe. I love that question, and Jacob's going to love it as well, and I'd like to apologise to both of you for faffing around with my half-cut answer, which now I'm frankly embarrassed to recall. I was kind of right, but, I mean, why was I talking about prophylactics, for heaven's sake? It's just not decent. Qualifications, Joe?
I'm a golf greenkeeper. I'm actually currently sat in a lawnmower, and at one point I was the youngest head greenkeeper in the country.
Are you angling, mate?
Maybe a little bit.
Go on. Yeah.
I'm Ray Liotta, and you're listening to James O'Brien on
tight.
LBC.
I tell you, that is weak, but you can have it.
You build it.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. 12:40 is the time. Where's the golf course?
It's Bawtry Golf Course.
Bawtry. With the crown in Bawtry still.
Yeah.
Is that the one with the moat? You go over a little bridge to get into it?
No.
I'm getting confused.
I can't think what that one's called now.
No, but there is one in Bawtry like that, isn't there?
Yeah, well, there's a few.
Well, my dad covered the miners' strike back in the day, and the crown in Bawtry was always his favourite place to stay. And we used to live in Doncaster. My first house was in Burg Wallis. So it's almost certain that some of Mum's old mates play golf on your course. Small world, eh?
Yeah.
Mind how you go, Joe. Neris, a lovely name, is in Bishop Stortford.
Thank
Neris,
you.
You're very welcome. Question or answer?
It's question, please.
Oh, hang on. We didn't give Joe a round of applause, Keith. We did. Oh, well done. At least there's one professional working on this programme. Carry on, Neris.
Hiya. So, when I was younger and I was doing my Duke of Edinburgh expedition volunteering, or actually with skill, I learnt to do bell ringing in the church.
Oh, cool beans.
And I'm wondering, at the end of a bell rope, which is where you do the hand stroke, there's a piece of what was carpet then that was called the sally. I just want to know why it's called a sally.
Oh, that's nice. It's there, presumably, to stop you getting a rope burn or something like that, is it? Or
yeah, I think so.
To act as a sort of brake.
The rope kind of jumps out the hand at the end of the stroke. But I'm just wondering where the word Sally came from.
That's lovely. Did you keep up your bell ringing?
I'd like to say I did, but I think I got a bit cool. So, no, I didn't. That's really bad against all the bell ringers at the moment.
But well, it's
I
not.
Didn't I mean, keep it up, unfortunately, no.
You're unlikely to pull much by telling your tales of bell ringing. I understand.
That's a really bad
pun.
Yeah, really
pull.
Bad pun.
Pull. It wasn't a deliberate pun, but there you go. They're getting pointed out.
I didn't even know.
I'm not aware of them myself. I love. I always fancy bell ringing. Did you ever accidentally take off? Because that's one of the occupational hazards, isn't it?
Oh, a couple of times in a day, because you weren't supposed to look up at the bell, and I kept doing that, and I was awful. I won't lie. I don't even know how I managed to pass that as a skill. But
was it bronze?
I did enjoy it. It was good. It was bronze. Yes. Long time ago.
Carry on. I love that question. A lovely question. Thank you, Neris. Why is it called a Sally, the kind of carpety bit at the bottom of a rope, a bell rope? Extra point if you can tell me what the practice of bell ringing is called. No, Keith, not for you. Campanology. Hattie is in Camden. Hattie, question or answer?
It's a question, Dame.
Carry on.
Firstly, also just really nice to speak to you. I've been a long-time listener.
Likewise. Thank you, Hattie.
My question is, what is the kind of origin, or when did we start sleeping in beds? When did we start sleeping with a duvet and a fluffy pillow?
Well, hang on. There's two very different questions there. So, I mean, the origin of a bed would have been, pretty much as soon as, did you just pull something over you like an animal skin when you were sleeping because it kept you warm?
But when did we start having a bed? Who was like, well, now we need to have, a bed rather than just...
Right, now we've got there, Hattie, you see. You needed a little bit of work. You needed a good editor. But we've got there now. We've got a really good question. When was the first bed made?
Yeah. Who came up with that?
Yeah,
I'd like to know.
I love that. So forget about duvets, because I was going to start talking about putting down reeds, pulling an animal skin over yourself and all that malarkey. We just want to know when the first bed was recorded, the first recorded bed.
Yeah, I'd like to know.
So would I now.
Can you find out?
Well, I'll try. I'm not holding out a great amount of hope, because it's probably one of those things that's lost in the mists of time, but you never know. An archaeologist, the earliest known bed. Well, lovely question. That's a really lovely question. 03456060973. What do you mean it's Sam's question? How can it be Sam's question if Hattie asked it? I get so confused by these things. 12:44 is the time. Mitch is in Croydon. Mitch, question or answer?
Answer, James.
Carry on, Mitch.
James, lovely to speak with you, as always.
Likewise,
James.
Yes.
Norman churches have square towers, anything built after the Norman period. Before that, generally round towers were made of flint.
Right.
And so it's to do with building materials. So in places where there is suitable building materials and money, then you get square towers, because obviously it's very difficult to make corners out of flint if you mix it with mortar. But if you actually build something out of stone, it's much easier to build a rectangular shape.
Makes perfect sense. So post-Norman will be what?
Post-Norman will be square, so a square tower.
So the rounder towers will be older than the square tower?
Correct.
Oh, gosh. Really? Really?
Yep.
1066?
Absolutely. Yes.
Pre-1066?
Yes.
I'm not having it.
There's about... most of them are actually found round towers in places like East Anglian counties like Cambridge, Suffolk and Norfolk.
Yes.
And those are about 190 to 200 towers.
Okay, we've got confused, because you're talking about round towers and square towers. You're not actually talking about steeples.
No, well, you don't count those as a tower.
No, well, I did, mate, because I'm not an expert, so I was thinking a steeple. So a steeple is post-Norman.
Most steeples are post-Norman.
But in fact, they're mostly 18th, 19th century. You've got a kind of Gothic thing going on with a steeple. A steeple or a spire, but a church tower, if it's square... It's
post-Norman.
That's
so
lovely.
That period between Norman and Gothic, you get square towers.
And Shropshire in particular would be...
Shropshire in particular, those sort of counties will have square towers because they've got more money after the Normans landed generally.
But no, the rural ones, he will have seen round towers, won't he? As he was making his way through particularly deepest, darkest Shropshire.
I think he mentioned he saw a square tower, didn't he?
I thought it was the other way around. I thought they got square as he came closer to London. But either way, you've answered the question whichever way round my memory may be. Qualifications? I love that answer.
I used to be a lecturer in history.
Oh, well, that'll do. Round of applause for Mitch. I knew that. 12:46.
Mystery Hour on LBC with James O'Brien. Call 0345 6060973.
12:49 is the time. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. We're looking to find out why the regular meetings between an MP and his or her constituents is called a surgery. Why is the piece of carpet at the bottom of a bell rope called a sally? So a first recorded incidence of a bed. And why do babies stick their bottom lips out when they are crying? That, I think, is everything, isn't it? I think. And I've got phone lines free. The reason I'm doing this now is that if you ring in, then you, because you've got an answer, then you're in with a better than evens chance of getting on air. But you must be very, very confident of your answer, because I will ask you what your qualifications are. And if they are not good, then you will be nationally and publicly humiliated. If they are good, you'll get a lovely round of applause. So if you can answer any of these questions, why is it called a sally, the bit of sort of buffer carpet on the end of a bell ringing rope? The first recorded incidence of a bed. I've had a biblical answer, but I don't generally take texts, tweets or emails during Mystery Hour. The etymology question this week revolves around surgery and why the word that for most of us has entirely medical connotations also applies in the world of politics. And the question I thought we'd get an answer to, but the sticking out of the bottom lip when we're crying, either specific to babies or not, doesn't matter, does it? But if you can answer any of those, the number you need is 0345 6060973. James is in Manchester. James, question or answer?
Answer, please.
Carry on.
So surgery actually just means any work done by hand. So any work done personally by hand.
Really?
So, yeah. So it's from the Greek. It's from, I think, chirurgia, from what I remember.
Yeah.
And it's basically just work done by hand. So it's any work done personally. And
therefore a personal meeting with your MP, rather than having to go through the office and deal with somebody else.
Yeah.
Qualifications?
I'm a surgeon. So when I was at medical school, and actually later than that, because we still get taught, they bring up the first PDF or whatever it be, and then they usually kind of reel off the where does surgery come from, where does the word surgeon come from, and it's work done by hand. And yeah,
Kier, Greek word for hand. Kier.
It's
ergon. Work. Dulia. No, not dulia. That's a modern Greek word for work. Yeah, I think you've gone. By Jove, James, I think you've gone and done it.
But so that's pretty much it is. Just work done by hand, and especially because originally surgeons here, it was all done by barbers. Original surgeons were done by barbers because they did all the stuff by hand. Doctors didn't do any surgery earlier on, so it was all the stuff done by hand.
Apothecaries would be giving out herbs and spices and what have you, but the surgeons would be the ones with the sore bones.
They didn't do any of the surgery.
The sore bones.
Yeah.
And I wonder if the political origin roots were in ancient Greece as well, where the meeting with it doesn't matter now, you've nailed it. You've done it. That's a really lovely answer. And it gets you a round of applause.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. It's 12:53 and we are currently cooking with gas, but I have to tell you there are only 5 or 6 minutes left to get a full board of answers, and we need to know why the thing at the end of a bell ringing rope is called a sally. I thought that one would be quite straightforward. 0345 6060973. We would like the first recorded incidence of a bed. The number remains the same. And the question about babies sticking out their bottom lips. And if you don't ring in with answers to those, then I will end the programme by singing today, or in the spirit of our lovely conversation earlier, possibly sharing some of my favourite recipes. So be warned. Charlie is in Sutton Coalfield, spelt by my young producer Sam as if it was actually a coalfield. Carry on, Charlie.
Hi, nice talk to you. First time caller in.
You're very welcome. Welcome aboard. What have you got for me?
Well, basically, sadly, it was to do with the church spires, which I think you've had an answer to, but I disagree with the answer given.
That's what we call a steward's inquiry. To be clear, he was pointing at the square tower. There was a distinction between towers and spires. So you followed all of that. So what do you think? What do you think Mitch got wrong?
Well, as much as I agree with him in terms of the manufacture of the, you know, the production of the building, and he's quite correct in terms of the round towers and the square.
Oh, good.
Square towers. Where I wanted to see if the answer was where you have a square tower. And on the top of the square tower, many of these churches used to have a round spire made of wood.
Oh.
And In rural areas, this would frequently become damaged and then it would fall over, and it was never repaired. And the reason why I know this is because the church in Kidworth Beecham, where I grew up as a child, used to have a spire, and it fell over in the 19th century, and a young girl on her way home from school jumped over the top of the spire that was on the floor. And she went home and told her mum, and was told off for telling such silly stories. Right, and that's why it's always stuck in my head.
That's like sort of local folklore, is it?
Well, it had actually, the photograph of it, it actually had fell over in the storm.
Why didn't her mum believe her?
Well, would you believe it if your son came over and said, I've jumped over the weather vane on top of the church?
Oh, I see, because your mum thought it was still on top of the church.
Correct.
I love this. Correct. That's like, do you do that thing ever where you say to a child, can you stick your tongue out and touch your nose?
That's it.
It's the same as that, isn't it? It's like a verbal illusion almost. I love that.
My answer would be that a lot of these square towers probably used to have spires, but because they were damaged and fell over, and because they're in rural areas where there isn't obviously the wealth to rebuild them, they stay square.
I don't think you refute anything that Mitch said. I think you've just added more knowledge to the answer he already provided.
Absolutely.
That's beautiful.
Pleasure of your show. Oh, enjoy it very much.
Oh, hang on then, Charlie. Please accept a round of applause with my compliment. That's a lovely art. That's really lovely. Kibworth Beecham is one of those little villages. It's in Leicestershire, I think, that you would never get a foreigner to be able to spell. I'm going to ask Sheila Fogarty. How do you spell Kibworth Beecham?
Oh, it'll have a secret L and M in it somewhere, won't
it's
it?
Just the Beecham bit that's tricky, but you probably know, actually.
Oh, Beauchamp.
Beauchamp, beautiful fields. So we've got another Norman connection there. God, you learn a lot when you pay attention to this programme. Giles is in Truro in Cornwall. Giles, question or answer?
Answer.
Carry on.
It's the Sally question.
Oh, yes.
The word originates from a French word, which means the action of a jumping rope. So that's why they called it the Sally. But one of our older bell ringers used to call it a fillet as well, which I believe he explained is another rope term for meaning something to do with a corded rope.
Well, I never. So you are a bell ringer?
I am, yes, yeah.
How did you get into it?
My dad taught me to ring when I was quite young.
And you still do it every Sunday, do you?
Yes, yeah.
Are you in church at the moment?
No, at work.
What's that noise in the background?
I don't know, it's something else at work.
Oh, OK. Oh, well, I have qualifications bell ringer. Sally, French word meaning a giant, to Sally, like a verb.
Yeah, the French word is salure.
Salure, and then it becomes a Sally. Well, do you know, oddly enough, that brings us back to both the Norman church towers, and I wonder when bells first appeared. Was it after the... There'll be part of the answer to that, won't it? Would have actually involved bells. I didn't realise at the time a square tower you can put bells in. Anyway, I'm just waffling, Giles. You get a round of applause for a beautiful answer.
Thank you.
No, thank you. And get back to work. Seriously, this country isn't going to run itself. Steve's in Horsham. Steve, question or answer?
It's an answer.
Carry on.
Your question about why does babies roll their bottom lip or curl their bottom lip?
When they're crying.
When they're crying. Hmm. I was told this by a midwife many years ago I was having my son's vaccinations done, that the reason they curl their bottom lip when they're crying is because due to this, all the emotions going through them at that moment, it helps the mother soothe them when she latches them on. It helps them latch on to their mother. Otherwise, if they didn't roll their bottom lip, they couldn't get soothed by a bottle or by mum, and they wouldn't be able to feed and relax them.
I'm buying that. Why are you laughing?
That's what she told me.
Because it might be true. Might be a load of old nonsense.
Yeah, but you try. Pardon me, Sheila Fogarty, but you try sucking a teat without curling your bottom
lip. I've watched your face for the last 30 seconds and I'm going to leave that to you, if that's OK.
Yeah, carry on. Steve, okay. Round of applause. And, you know, that's brought us in bang on 12:59, except we haven't done we've done them all, except the bed. There's a biblical reference, as Sheila Fogarty will know, when Joseph went to visit Jacob when he was dying.
Pick up your bed and walk.
Yeah, was that the first recorded mention of a bed? Well, anyway, it's not enough for a round of applause. That's it from me for another day. Thank you for a lovely show. We'll do it all again tomorrow from 10. Here is Sheila Fogarty.
Thanks very much, James.